Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events. And while Florida is beginning to reopen, we are going to take another break from the coronavirus talk, and we are going to answer some listener questions for the next couple weeks. First up is a question from a listener. We ask for these on social media all the time, so if you guys ever want to hear a topic, shoot it out on there, and we will eventually get to it. We've gotten a lot of different questions on courtroom etiquette. What you can and can't do in court, what happens if you break that etiquette, are there rules, how do you learn them, how do you know what to do? So we're going to get into all that today. We're going to talk a little bit about whether, you know, the TV or movie dramas, whether they follow the proper courtroom etiquette or not, and we'll have some fun with that. And for another little fun part of the podcast, we are going to use a new Nate Curran clip to use as our intro and outro this week, so enjoy. All right, so we're going to jump right into courtroom etiquette. I've got Dad and Peter Sartes here with us today. Dad, why don't you tell us, where does courtroom etiquette come from? Why is there such a thing as courtroom etiquette?
Well, like most of our judicial system, it comes from the British and the way they conduct trials. And, you know, there's a lot of TV shows about British trials and how genteel it is and calm and everybody, you know, speaks to each other with respect. The big difference is, in England, one day you can be the defense lawyer and the other day you can be the prosecutor, so you have sympathy for both sides all the time. In the United States, we've changed that system where we have permanent prosecutors, plus we don't have barristers, which are courtroom lawyers, and solicitors, which are non-courtroom lawyers. So it came from England, we borrowed it. The way it's done basically is 90% the way the British did it when it came over.
Minus the wigs.
Minus the wigs and the robes.
Yeah, except
for the judge.
Which are part of courtroom etiquette. I mean, where all this came from, they had to wear those weird white wigs. They had to wear certain outfits. They had to look a certain way in court, which we still have some of that, which is the first thing we'll get to, Pete, which is when talking about courtroom etiquette, is there a dress code for anybody that comes in the courtroom?
Truth be told, I don't think I've ever seen a written dress code, either for lawyers or for people that are presenting themselves in front of court. But let's be real. What lawyer... Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I've actually seen lawyers come to court in things that I look at them like, and thinking they're the defendant in a criminal case. But normally, you know, we try to keep the decorum professional.
And everybody's probably seen that meme with the lawyer that has like the baggy pants dragging on the ground and old beat up shoes with holes in them and saying, if this is what your lawyer looks like, you're going to jail.
That's right.
So, yeah, so there's... Okay, so... That's kind of a different answer than I was thinking. I have always known that there is courtroom etiquette and a dress code for everyone that comes in the courtroom, but it's different for lawyers, obviously, than citizens or lay people that come in the courtroom, whether it be a party to a case or a witness. So, Dad, what is the dress code for lawyers in court?
Well, for male lawyers,
right,
it's a coat and tie, a sport coat or a suit and a tie. And it is... it's a little harder to define what female lawyers would wear, but normally it's in good taste. Like everything else, your first impression is really important. So the way you make that first impression on the judge or on the jury is going to be important. So that's why you dress appropriately for court.
And it's basically the female equivalent to a coat and tie. So it's a nice right. blouse and you can wear a nice skirt or pantsuit or whatever the equivalent is to a male wearing a coat and tie.
Well, it wasn't that long ago where female lawyers could not wear pantsuits.
Right, right. But now for sure they can. So again, and this is the dress code is definitely something that changes with the times as we progress and as things change, it kind of changes too, because you know how tight some suits are now would have been frowned upon in the past versus baggy suits, things like that. So the dress code is kind of ever changing with the times, but more specifically when we get to courtroom etiquette and including dress code, what we gave is kind of a general line you don't want to go below, meaning you don't want to show up to court without at least a sport coat or a suit jacket on or without at least a tie. This all changes. Dress code and every other piece of courtroom etiquette changes from judge to judge. So it really depends on what judge you're in front of with what kind of etiquette is going to be expected in their courtroom. And why don't you kind of explain why that is, Dad?
Each judge controls their courtroom. They're the king or queen of that courtroom, and the rules that they make apply to everybody, and you have to obey those rules for that judge.
And it's important to realize that no matter what rules one judge has, it doesn't necessarily mean another judge is going to have to abide by those same rules.
Right. For instance, some judges require you to stand whenever the jury comes in. Some judges don't care if you stand when the jury comes in. That's a local rule of that judge, whether you stand or not.
Okay, so standing and sitting is a big rule and a big issue in courtroom etiquette, Pete. So what are some situations where lawyers and or clients and or the people sitting in the gallery are expected to stand, and when are they expected to sit?
And let's just say normally when the judge or the jury enters or exits the courtroom, everybody stands up.
And that is where, you know, people have seen on TV shows, or if you've ever been in the courtroom, the bailiff says, all rise.
Correct.
Everyone stands up.
You also normally, from a perspective of decorum, when you address the court, you would stand up.
When you say address the court, what do you mean?
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
Addressing the court is formal language for talking to the judge.
Right. So when you say something to the judge, like, judge, we have two matters we'd like you to hear before we start this trial or before we start this hearing, you stand up. When you argue your point during a motion, when they say, defense counsel, do you have anything you'd like to add? You stand up when you talk to the court. So whenever you're speaking to the court, you stand up to address the court out of respect. Okay, that's one of the big rules. Is there ever a time where you're allowed to sit down when you speak to the court?
If the court, and we keep saying that, when we say the court, we actually mean the judge.
The judge, right.
If the judge gives you permission, and a lot of judges, frankly, even in our courts here, especially if there's no jury or there's no nobody in the audience, they may say, just stay seated. And they'll be a little bit more informal on the rules of decorum just to get things done. But normally, unless the court gives you permission, you should not presume that the rules don't apply.
And just because I know my dad's probably chomping at the bit to get to this, at the end we will talk about some of the differences between federal court and state court. But right now we're mostly talking about state court, even though most of this also applies in federal court for what we've talked about so far. But so continuing in state court, we've talked about standing and sitting. What about objections? Okay, everybody hears objections. Is there a proper way to object? Is there an improper way to object? Is that part of courtroom etiquette in your opinion?
Yes, you stand, you state your objection, and then the court can decide whether it wants to hear argument on your objection, whether it wants to hear the other side's opinion on your objection, and then the court rules, and you sit down. Arguing with the court is never a good idea, and that really is a bad practice because the court represents the law in that room. And jurors always like the judges. They always think the judges are the best thing in that room. So if you're disrespectful to the judge, if you show bad etiquette toward the judge, then a jury's going to have a bad impression to you.
Okay, so Pete, when objecting, what is the proper way to object?
The proper way would be to stand up, say objection, and state whatever the purpose of your objection is. For example, objection leading. Objection...
Right, so we learn rules in law school and, you know, in the rules of evidence that we learn as we practice. Each objection has its own kind of name or title. We did a podcast on this, so if you want to know more about those, you can go back and listen to that podcast. But there's a reason for that. And the reason is you don't say objection. You do say objection speculation. You don't say objection. This witness doesn't know what he's talking about. He wasn't even there. You can't believe what he's saying. He's just trying to guess what the answer is.
And that's known as a speaking objection. A lot of judges will really dress you down for that.
Right. So that's part of courtroom etiquette that you want to stay away from. You don't want to just kind of spout out why you think this objection is wrong. And then Pete, I think it was you that said you stand when you object, which most courtrooms do enforce. But I had a trial one time where a lawyer was sitting during all of his objections, and about the fifth time, and he had practiced in front of this judge a ton, about the fifth time the judge said, I'm not sure when we started sitting doing these objections, but I'd like you to stand now, Mr. So-and-so. And he was very embarrassed, and it was actually really funny. But that's why it's important to remember that judge to judge, the rules may be different. Pete, is it appropriate or proper to speak to opposing counsel at certain times throughout the trial or in open court?
If you're actually in the middle of proceedings, the rules of etiquette say that you don't speak to the lawyer. You address, meaning you speak to the court, and the court then will bounce back and forth between the parties. Now, there are times where you're going to have to talk to their side. Normally, you would ask the court for permission to, and the term is confer with opposing counsel.
So basically, at all times, the appropriate action is to ask the court's permission. That's a big key in courtroom etiquette, is just basically asking the court's permission to do things. Dad, talk about if you lose an objection or you want clarification for an objection or you're just not done arguing, but you don't want to do it, like you said, in open court where the jury can hear you disagreeing with the judge and the judge having to kind of, would you say, dress you down?
Admonish you. Right?
Whatever you said. So talk about what you do then in that situation. If you think it's an important point and you think the judge has made the incorrect decision, what do you do but also follow courtroom etiquette?
A lot of jurors see lawyers say, may I approach the bench? Where the lawyers then go up to the court and speak privately out of the hearing of the jury so that the jury is not tainted by what is said, but you're able to argue your point to the judge privately and say the speaking things you couldn't say or weren't supposed to say from the table. Because a lot of these things we're talking about, you're not supposed to do, but there are still lawyers that you find doing them.
Right. And speaking of that, when you see these lawyers objecting sometimes, the way we are talking about doing it is the appropriate way. It doesn't mean that's how all lawyers do it. Unfortunately, lawyers screw this part up all the time and they think it helps their case, which I don't think it does most of the time. But there's a very famous big shot trial lawyer that was telling a story at a conference. So it's not like this is private information about how he's very flamboyant in the way that he talks. He's very animated. And he's like, did they really do this, doctor? Did they really tell this person that they didn't need this medication? And then their leg fell off. Like, he was, you know, really gets into his questions. And the defense counsel kept objecting to him being flamboyant. Objection, too loud. Objection, he's, you know, trying to inflame the jury with the way he's asking these questions, which are not necessarily proper objections. So after a few of those objections, when the defense counsel got up and was asking his question, saying, doctor, did you read this page? What does this page mean? That lawyer stood up and said, objection, boring. And he said the judge really admonished him for that. And we talked about how, you know, the guys I was sitting with talked about how certain lawyers just can get away with things, because if we were to do that in a courtroom as younger lawyers, the judge may throw us out. And we'll talk about at the end what happens when you do break this courtroom etiquette and what kind of is the remedy or the repercussion for that. But I mean, there's a lot of lawyers that really push this stuff close to the line, or even, you know, kick the line right over with how they are in the courtroom.
A lot of lawyers, when they're doing that, they also do something that's really improper, and that's interrupt. You know, you're making an argument or you're standing up and giving your objection or you're doing something. They just totally interrupt you instead of waiting till you're finished and then doing what they want to do or say what they're supposed to say.
Right. So that's another piece of courtroom etiquette, is you don't interrupt anybody when they're speaking. You basically wait for the judge to tell you to start talking. You wait for the judge to ask if you have anything to say. You don't interrupt the judge. You don't interrupt opposing counsel. And you don't interrupt the witness most of the time.
The key is, and I think for the average people that are listening to this, the key you need to understand is that when it comes to courtroom etiquette, it's not an argument in court. Meaning it's not a screaming match. It's
no.
Not all that. It is decorum. Meaning,
yes,
I make an argument. Whether you agree with it or not, you know, you let me finish it. Opposing counsel and gets to respond. It's supposed to be very cordial that way.
It's supposed to be polite.
Yes.
It's supposed to be ethical. You're supposed to not lie. You're supposed to have candor with the court. Those are all parts of courtroom etiquette, so that the court should be able to believe what you say, and you should say it in a nice, calm voice. That's how it should be. Now, you know, things can get heated and it can really get like a boxing match in there. So sometimes the blood pressure rises, but for the most part, it's really supposed to be an even keel, calm conversation. We had some questions about some of the specific things people hear. So, for example, why do lawyers say, may it please the court, opposing counsel, members of the jury, things like that, before they start opening statement, closing arguments?
Again, it's to look like you're a gentleman or you're a lady when you're speaking. It's to look like, you know, look, I want to just get everybody's permission because I don't want to interrupt anyone. I want to just speak. And so it looks good. It sounds good. Yes, I know it's a little overly formal, but it always sounds good, and no one's going to get offended by you asking someone else if it's okay.
And it's very British, frankly. It's very proper. And the decorum in British courts is still, I mean, literally over the top. Like, they wait for, there's a lot of symbolism that happens in the courtroom. And we, as colonists, have kind of fallen off of that a little bit, but we're still far more formal in court than we would be in, you know, day-to-day life.
All right, next let's talk about moving around the courtroom. What's proper etiquette as far as getting up from counsel table, walking over towards the judge, giving evidence, walking towards the witnesses, walking towards the jury, walking towards opposing counsel or the opposing party? What's proper etiquette?
Well, with the exception of when you're giving opening or closing statements, which you're allowed to stand up and speak to the jury, you have to ask permission to do all that. Some judges do not require that.
To do everything else, you mean?
Right. Some judges don't. Some judges, you say, for instance, you want to go get an exhibit that's at an exhibit table and take it to a witness. You're supposed to say, in the formalities of it, may I approach the witness? May I approach to get the document? Some judges say, you don't have to ask permission. Just come up, get the document,
move
and go
freely,
take it.
Move freely about the
because
court.
They want to keep things moving along because... Yeah, really, that takes up time to do all this stuff. And some judges just believe that you shouldn't be doing it.
Right. So, but for the most part, if you want to walk anywhere else in the courtroom when you're not doing your opening or closing, you need to ask for the court's permission. Again, we're talking mostly about state court because this is one of the biggest differences with federal court, which we can kind of transition to that now. What are some of the big differences, Pete, between courtroom etiquette in state court versus federal court?
Federal court is very formal. And for the most part, federal court practices are a lot more stringent than they would be in state court. Not to say that the rules are different. They're really not, because state court is supposed to have the same decorum as federal court. But the federal court's just, I think, the judges, for the most part, especially when there are people in the audience, take it very seriously. Very rarely will a federal judge wave people standing up or sitting down if there's a jury in the audience. There's a jury in panel, or if there's an audience in the courtroom. They take things very seriously. In federal court, you're not going to move from that podium unless the court gives you permission to, or some bailiff is going to stop you.
Right, and it is, well, the court will stop you. So, I mean, it is very, very strict, stringent ruling, at least here in the Middle District, which is where we primarily practice federally, is... you will not move from an arm's length from that podium. So everybody's seen a courtroom. They see the podium. It's usually where we ask questions from or start our opening statement. But usually we walk around, we show pictures, we show evidence, we show poster boards, we show a PowerPoint, whatever it is. But in federal court, you have to do all that while standing behind the podium. And I've even had the situation come up in federal court where I've been arm's length away and the judge will tell me to get back behind the podium. So it's not even necessarily arm's length, but you have to be behind the podium. Why is that, Dad? Why do they want that?
Well, they want that because they don't want drama. They don't want acting to be something that influences the jury.
Which is kind of big in state court.
It's a matter of volume. You got a judge that on a pretrial day are going to have 100 lawyers in his courtroom. Well, you know, how do you keep 100 lawyers under control? It's not easy. A pretrial in federal court, you may have 4 lawyers, and it's easy to control a federal courtroom, and you're not going to take shortcuts in the federal courtroom because you've got the time because you have a lower volume. You've got 100 cases at one time in state court. You've got to move fast, and you may let people get away with things that the federal judge doesn't let you get away with.
How do you find out? Is there anything else you want to touch on, Dad?
No, basically that's it.
The podium's the big one.
It's the podium, and it's the calm. It's also quiet in a federal courtroom. Mm-hmm, right. There's not this buzz of people talking all the time.
So let's real quick hit on just a couple quick things, whichever one of you guys wants to spit a couple out. What is some courtroom etiquette that is expected from lay people that come and sit in the audience, whether they're waiting for their pretrial or hearing to be called, or whether they're a witness, or whether they're just watching?
Well, I think one of the key really you should talk about is the client.
Well, no, I don't want to get to the client yet. Oh. So everybody else besides the client.
If you're in the gallery, that's the technical term for sitting in the audience, they expect that you're going to, by the way, it's a public courtroom, so you have the right to be there unless the court has closed the courtroom for some legal right. purpose. But they're going to expect that you're respectful and quiet and don't disrupt the proceedings. You're going to be expected to stand and sit just like everybody else. a lot of people, and we see it unfortunately in the news a lot. There's
stand
a lot
and sit, not like the lawyers, but when they say all rise.
You need to rise, right? You can't be playing on your cell phone.
Right. You got to keep your cell phone, put them away, turn them off, turn them on silent.
And you see it a lot on the news where there's a lot of emotion. For example, if somebody is, if it's a murder and there's a sentencing and people are just very emotional, that normally does not happen, especially in federal court. They don't want to see that.
No, they shut it down quick.
They shut it down real
quick. No hats in the courtroom. They don't let you fidget with some stuff. If you have something in a backpack, they'll ask you to put it back in there. They really don't want you doing some other random thing while you're sitting in there, because if you're sitting in there, they expect that you're going to be watching, not just doing your homework.
Right. One of the worst things I ever saw, if we can just go off track for a second, is I remember a woman coming into the courtroom and she was holding a baby. And I remember the court just stopped, dead in tracks, turned to her, the bailiff, brought him up, and just basically said, get that baby out of here. Meaning, not that there's anything wrong with the baby, but we're not going to have a child watching these criminal proceedings. Get the baby out of here.
Okay, Dad, and what is the expected courtroom etiquette for a client? Because it's also different. Are you talking about a criminal client who's currently incarcerated, a criminal client who's bailed out, a civil client? What do you mean when you say client?
I'm kind of talking about all of them. Okay. Because they all have to make a good impression on the jury, and they need to make a good impression on the judge, whether it's civil or criminal. A haircut, nice clothes, collared shirt, shirt tucked in, all these things. People, you know, may say, gosh, those things are unimportant, what you wear. What you wear in a courtroom is important. You can win or lose a case by a jury having an opinion about what you are like, what you do, and how you look.
Well, most people think that most cases, and especially big verdicts, big number verdicts, come whether or not somebody likes the client. That's one of the biggest factors in the case. The lawyers do everything they can. They present the case, but it really comes down to whether or not a jury likes and believes that the client actually is injured, actually needs this money, and so on and so forth.
Well, I'm convinced I've gotten some not guilty verdicts, because they looked over and they saw my client, and he was not the person that was being described by the agent on the stand.
Yeah. So what happens if you break this courtroom etiquette? What's the repercussion?
Normally, it depends on the level depends of on what violation, you do. Right? Mm-hmm. But normally the court will say something to you. An admonition is the first thing. If you continue to act inappropriately, that admonition very much may escalate. And the escalations can be everything from as simple as, you know, holding you, I don't want to say holding you in contempt.
Well, they could, but they could.
That's really extreme.
Right. And
I'm
holding
trying to
you
find
in contempt,
the other side.
Holding you in contempt is throwing you in jail, basically, for doing certain things. And that's almost always after multiple warnings do you get held in contempt.
Yeah.
It's usually not the first time you, I don't know, yell or approach the bench without asking or stand or walk away from the podium in federal court. They're not going to throw you in jail for it. They'll admonish you. But
we used to have a judge here, BJ Driver, that if you were late, one of the things we didn't talk about was always being on time. But if you're late, Judge Driver would fine you $25 a minute. That you were
I don't
late
think that would fly anymore.
When you came in.
But
$25 a minute.
Was he a federal court judge
state,
or state?
State court judge.
The other side.
They're the ones that are usually late.
The other side is you risk, if you're a lawyer and you're being disruptive, you risk the judge striking, for example, evidence or striking your ability to cross-examine somebody on a particular topic.
Right. And I think that's kind of when we get down to the issue, one of the worst things that can happen is it can create an appellate issue for you. So you keep objecting improperly. You keep standing up. You slam your hand on counsel table. You cause these disruptions. You inflame the jury in a certain way that it may affect the verdict, where you get a really huge high verdict. And one of the appellate issues the defense says is he was inflaming this jury. He was tricking this jury with all of his over-dramatization of everything and his yelling at me and his speaking objections and all that. Piled on together created one big issue, and that's why the number was so high. And we've actually seen cases get overturned and have to have a retrial because a lawyer did exactly that. So I think that's the worst case scenario is what can happen if you really break courtroom etiquette. But a judge can do a lot of things. You know,
Well, that's the problem. The judge has to control the courtroom. And that example you just gave is because that judge didn't really control that lawyer like he should have to make sure that the trial is fair for everybody.
So when speaking of over-dramatization and dealing with this in a courtroom, let's talk for a second about what TV shows and movies get right or wrong about courtroom etiquette. Anything stick out to you guys?
Well, the one thing you always see on TV is the screaming, yelling, pointing your finger, putting it in your face, all those antics that you see that really don't happen in a real courtroom. You got to realize a real courtroom is really something where you present the evidence and you try to limit the drama, at least the lawyers, the drama the lawyers create. But that's all you see on TV is drama the lawyers create.
Yeah, I think another thing that you always see on TV, which is only partially courtroom etiquette, partially just the rules of discovery, is there's always some piece of paper that just appears, and they just show it to them, and they never showed it to them before, and it comes in, and they just bring it in. But I think that they just walk around the courtroom way too freely in TV shows. They just bring evidence up. They don't ask to approach the witness.
They almost crawl into the jury box.
They lay down on the jury box and wipe their tears on the juror's hair.
When they're doing closing arguments.
And the last one that I see, you know, being broken on TV and movies the most is just blatantly violating the rules of evidence and the rules that you're supposed to, how you're supposed to do things, how you're supposed to argue in closing statements, how they say, how would you feel if this happened to you? Putting the jurors in the shoes of the plaintiff or the defendant, you know, breaking the literal golden rule is what we call it in the legal field. So, I mean, you know, it's courtroom etiquette. It goes without saying is you also follow the rules of law, the rules of procedure, the rules of evidence. So that gets broken all the time in TV shows and movies. So do you guys have any real life experiences or real life stories that you've seen poor etiquette? I know we've gone over a couple already when they came up throughout the podcast, but just to finish with any other ones you can think of?
Well, I've had situations where lawyers have lost their temper. And that's what really, these things come out of an emotional situation usually, right. Not a lawyer really thinking, and start cussing at the defense lawyers on the other side, or start cussing at the witness during cross-examination, and just really foul language in the courtroom, and judges don't put up with that, and that'll get you an instant fine or an instant contempt.
You know, recently we had, and I saw it on the news, you know, we're all doing hearings now by, you know, virtually, by Zoom meetings and things like that.
That brings up a whole other set of issues.
Apparently some judge, and I think he's right, they hopped onto their Zoom meeting and the lawyer was still in bed wearing his pajamas. He's like, what are you doing? You know, just because you're not here doesn't mean you just get to show up.
I heard of one where they were out at the pool and they were in their bathing suit. During the hearing.
Or somebody stands up and he's got his tie and his shirt and suit on and he's got his gym shorts on or whatever. Yeah, I know.
Another thing that happens really bad, sometimes lawyers actually take a swing at other lawyers. Again,
emotional
thing, but right in the courtroom, they start a fight.
Yeah, that's also bad. So there's this famous one that gets played in all the ethics classes that we go to. Was it in Florida?
It was in Miami.
And this judge and this lawyer were getting at it, going after each other, real nasty to each other. And that's the worst thing a judge can do is kind of stoop down to the bad lawyer's level and wrestle with pigs. And he got dirty because he said, you want to take this outside? Literally, they went outside. The judge clocked the lawyer. The judge comes back in and then the judge got, you know, suspended for months after that. But I don't think he got disbarred. But I mean, it was bad. And sometimes this stuff happens. So we're giving these rules as if they're obvious, but a lot of lawyers, unfortunately, break them. So thank you for the questions. We're going to do some more in the coming weeks, so you guys keep them coming as well. Hopefully you enjoyed this one, and we'll be back with you next time.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Trakos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at tragoslaw.com.